Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast.
So welcome to episode 6 of the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. I'm Richard Osborne, and I'm joined here today by my good friend, Daniel Prince, author, world traveler, legend. I'll let him introduce himself. You can do it better. This is a spontaneous evening podcast after Dan came over for a coffee and started asking questions, as he is, in fact, also a language learner at the moment, learning French, and started asking me questions about how it's going at the moment with his language training. And I thought these questions need to be in a podcast, so I didn't even answer them. And we're here now to answer the questions that he asked me earlier. So why don't you introduce yourself a bit, Dan? Tell us, what are you doing here? What the hell? How did you get ended up in France after traveling the entire world? What's going on?
Thanks, Richard. Yes, we landed in France a couple of years ago with the intention of learning another language. The primary focus was getting our kids to learn another language. We decided as parents, if we could gift them anything out of education, what would it be? And it would be the ability to speak another language. And you know, with full knowledge that if they could acquire at least one more language, then that would open them up to possibly another, because communication is going to be so key in their lives going forward. So that's what brought us to a foreign country. And listening to, getting to know you and your family, how many languages do you speak?
Oh, like English and French really well, German sort of middle of the road.
Right. But your wife is German, so that you've constantly got three different languages going on in the home, which is amazing and very, we aspire to be a family like that because we've seen how culture can, and communication obviously, can open people up.
Although I'm surprised that your kids, because you're talking about, you know, giving that gift of language to your kids, I'm surprised that you guys didn't, because what people listening may not know, I'll put the link to your blog and to your book and everything in the description, but that you wrote a book about your travels, traveling around the world with your family, world schooling and all that. So I'm surprised actually that you guys didn't pick up anything on the road, a bit of Thai or a bit of...
Yes, we did. Each country that we visited, we would always sit down and try and learn the basics. You know, how do we count in this language? How do we say hello? How do we say goodbye? How do we say thank you, please? And all of the basics. And that started breaking down a lot of the barriers and fears around learning a language. And that set them up, I believe, because when they came here to France, we put them in day one, they had zero ability. They could, you know, we had colors and numbers and things and please and thank you, but they couldn't hold a conversation. They couldn't, converse with another kid in a classroom. But it was evident after day one that they were comfortable being uncomfortable. So that definitely gave us a little bit of a platform on which to work, I would say.
That was in France or that was in other countries?
That was in France when they went into the school system here.
Yeah.
But picking up the other languages as we went around, it was very basic.
Yeah, but there's already something that I talked about in a previous episode about sources of motivation, which I think is astounding, the difference between when you're, for example, on holiday traveling the world and your kids are aware that as language learners, they don't actually have to learn the language per se. First of all, you were in Asian countries where maybe they spoke a bit more English. And second of all, they know that they're not going to be, the need is not as internal because they're going to be moving on. Whereas you've landed in France, you've told them we're going to stick around for a while. They've got into school, you know, they're thinking I could make some friends here or I could just be in, you know, stay in isolation. Like, I think you're right. You can maybe go into like defensive mode at first. But as soon as you start seeing the games the other kids are playing and like you're going into class and people are speaking French, then that's going to drive that internal motivation as much as, you know, you can't even hold it back then. That's sort of, and it brings me on to, maybe we should just get straight into it because I'm dying to answer the question you asked me earlier.
Right. Can I just interject? But I can see you're about to go. I want to smash a myth for anybody listening out there that we were told when we arrived here, like, oh, don't worry about your kids. They're going to learn the language so quickly. Mm-hmm. Your youngest will learn it the quickest. It was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Our 11-year-old and 12-year-old, she learned it the quickest because, like, to your point, she had the motivation. Now, the three youngest, they were in the same school together. She was of an older age, so she had to go to a different school. So she was alone. She was completely alone, and she had the drive and she had the motivation, and she picked up the quicker. So to your point, it's all about motivation.
Can I drop another truth bomb on you just yes. about that? And, you know, we're putting that out there, and hopefully people are going to hear this, and you know, some people might go a bit crazy, or some people might say, yeah, that's right. I think when you have kids, you know, when you're just listening to myths, you wouldn't know, because people do say kids are language sponges. They pick up. Now, there's a science behind it that says that the amount of new words or phrases linguistically that an adult can pick up in a day is supposedly limited to a certain number. Now, I don't know where that's coming from evidence-wise, but they do say that in those tests, kids can learn more words than adults can. So you are theoretically going faster. But the truth bomb is that in reality, when it comes to language learning, the dumber your kid is, the slower they pick up the language. Now, the thing is, when you look at kids who are really young, you say, yeah, but this kid picked up a language in just a year. You know, I could never do that. There's a really simple reason you could never do that, which people don't think about, which staring them in the face, which is, as a kid, you have nothing but time for learning a language. You have nothing but time. Your entire day is just spent with people telling you stuff, learning, whatever. You know, the younger you are, the more people are holding your hand. So you actually have a huge amount of exposure every day. Whereas an adult, we're trying to just squeeze in 20 minutes of language learning, maybe twice a week, you know, with a 1 hour face-to-face lesson, if we're really lucky. So there's part of it is actually, if you put yourself in the situation your daughter was in, if I go and drop you in China today and just say, right, you got to survive in this village, there's no internet, there's no connection to the outside world, good luck, you know, Bear Grylls style, just your Bear Grylls, you're in the village, you got to survive, you'll learn that language really damn quickly.
I completely agree. So anybody that says, oh, it's so much easier for kids, it's not, it's a myth.
Yeah. There's a huge number of variables. I talked about that before as well. And, you know, just to hammer it home, there are a huge number of variables to learning language. And that is where your questions are really important, because you touched on three really important variables to learning language. And if you think, and this is where, you know, you can read anything you want on the internet about, you know, use our method and you're going to learn faster. This is the accelerated language learning method. It doesn't exist. You can't accelerate something that has so many variables for each person. You have to consider it on a case by case basis. It's one of those soft skills that is totally dependent on personality, mm-hmm. context, professional context, social context. Like, there are so many things involved that you can't just say, oh yeah, that's, you know, this is the way to learn and your kids are going to learn fast. Depends on what kind of kids they are. Depends on what they like. Are they introvert or are they extrovert? Are they going to want to make friends quickly? Are they going to get out in the playground and play? Are they going to sit in the library and read a book? Those two kids are going to learn at different speeds. But they will, and they will one day speak the language because they're in that context. And so that it will come. It has to, because the brain is wired like that. The brain is wired to say, what are my top needs? And if that need is in French, the brain is going to learn how to do that in French. Mm-hmm. You know, when I drop you in China, and you're trying to find the toilet and you don't know the Chinese symbol for toilet, it's one of those top needs that your brain's going to say, I really need to go. So let's just figure out what it is. And then you'll never forget it again. You'll be dying at 99 years old, let's hope. And I'll show you that symbol and you'll be like, toilet. And you'll go. And that's just, you know, that is literally the strength of that memory will endure forever. Anyway, totally off topic. But we're coming back around to it, aren't we?
Yes.
So hit me with what you're a learner and I am your friend and advisor. What do you need to know?
So the question I posed to you earlier, the most pertinent question is, where are those beers that you promised me?
Sorry.
But when we were sitting down and discussing around your Lotus podcast project, which I think is brilliant, I think you're doing a great job. Thanks. And from me being a learner on the other side of the fence, you know, I wanted to ask you and give you some feedback about experiences from a learning point of view. And I gave you the example of, you know, the teacher might ask me to say something in French, say a sentence in French. It could be a basic sentence.
Let's just clear up first, because it's really important to have the context. What level are you as a French language learner?
I would say a beginner.
Yeah, total beginner.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's important to mention. Yeah, so when we're talking about the kind of expressions you're learning, understanding that you're starting from scratch. So,
yes.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No problem. And that they might say, oh, can you just say, you know, we are going to go to the park this afternoon. And can you say that to me in French? And then you would write it down and everything and say it. And the trainer would then turn around to you and say something like, yes, or you could also say this, or you could also say this, or you could also put it like this, and give you another three or four options. At which point, from a learning point of view, you really lose confidence. First of all, you feel as though what you've said in the first place was wrong, and they're just finding a nice way to correct you, which probably is not the case at all. But what they're trying to do is layer on different things that you could have said, which would have also been acceptable. But the way I learn, and I don't know, and I can't speak for everybody, I feel that to be completely overwhelming. And can I not just stick with the one sentence that I used and be given the motivation and the confidence to say, yes, now let's get onto another thing and layer on top of that? So I just wonder where you see the job of a trainer when it comes around, if the motivation is already there, how do you nurture then the confidence?
Let's go just from the pedagogic standpoint first, what that teacher was doing and what's happening with that scenario. So, you know, it's a good way to do a lesson, because what that teacher is doing is, will you genuinely go into the park?
No, I just randomly picked a...
If that happened, that would be the first mistake, because there is a kind of tendency among some, you know, I don't want to call them non-expert language trainers, mm-hmm. but let's say untrained language trainers, to pull examples out of thin air, because that's what they're used to. When they pull out a course book, mm-hmm. you're filling in things where it's a sentence you have no relationship to. It's just, you know, Frank went to the cinema and he saw a film, and you don't know who Frank is, you don't know the cinema, you don't know the film. Mm-hmm. It's just an example. It's a model of the grammar, right? If the teacher is using those examples with you in a face-to-face lesson, it's a waste. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of a possible learning opportunity, because if you had wanted to say you were genuinely going to the park, and because you live in France, there might have been an actual functional reason that you wanted to say that. So you might have been thinking, mm-hmm. you know, the best example, because you live in the country, is when earlier you were in the bakery and you said, can I have a, you know, croissant, please? And they gave you one. And it's a baker you know well, and you sort of feel like you like to have a little conversation with them from time to time to test mm-hmm. out your French.
Yes.
That total beginner level, that's where you're at. You're at a point where it's funny to sort of, they speak English, but they sort of test you out in French sometimes, and it's a bit of a laugh. And they say, you know, what are you doing today, Dan? Sort of joking way in French. And you just read, like, you have that moment where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to tell them that I'm going to the park with my kids. And you're like, oh, and there's that frustration, and you have that nervous laugh, and then mm-hmm. you kind of go, oh, no, nothing special, and you just leave, and then you have that regret moment where you're like, God damn it, I wish I'd said that thing that I wanted to say. And that's a fantastic example, because you've got a need. It's not a super strong need, but it's a social need. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, making friends with someone kind of need. Which is a strong need, that sort of tribal need that we have as humans to get together and to communicate. That's why language exists. So mm-hmm. you are tapping into something there. Now, what happens there is you get this thing called knowledge gap, where your brain says, there's what I wanted to say and it coming out of my mouth, mm-hmm. and there's something missing in between there, mm-hmm. right? I wanted and I stumbled and I fell and it just didn't happen. So you're missing something. And when the brain sees missing something, that's when it's primed to learn that thing. There's more chance of you learning something when you know what you don't know, and then somebody tells you. So you actually get confronted with the fact that you don't know, and it's almost embarrassing, or you have some negative feeling about it. It's, you know, causing you stress or whatever. And then the teacher gives you that information. Well, then that is something that causes stronger memories, because the brain sees the need for the thing. It's primed with the need mm-hmm. for whatever you're learning. And for you, you then will be able to go back to that scenario the next day, and, you know, next time that comes up, you'll be able to say that thing. So if you have those real life examples to use in the class, that's great. Then the teacher tells you, okay, well, in French, to say I'm going to go to the park, it's like this. Once they tell you that, the brain has filled the gap. So the loop is complete. Brain is happy. What then a language trainer can have a tendency to do, which is a mistake, and is something that you don't, it's kind of one of those things you don't realize you're doing it because you're in the moment. So as a language trainer, you love the language so much. You love these examples. You love showing how things can be done differently, the synonyms for words. And did you know you can also say it like this? And imagine in this context, you could have also said, and oh, was the baker like a man or a woman? Because you could have said it like this or like this. And we're excited about sharing our passion for language with you. And we really need to hold ourselves back from that, because as soon as you start going down the road of explaining how amazing all the possibilities are, all you're doing is flogging a dead horse, because your brain has closed the loop. So it said, I had the missing information, now I've got it. After that, everything else is just sort of dust. It's not going to go in. You're going to say, oh, well, you could have also said, I'm thinking about going to the park. Or you said, I had intended to go to the park. Or I'm planning on going to the park. Or, I would really love to go to the park. And, oh, that's a subjunctive tense. Look at this. And you know, you can go all sorts of different directions. But it's as if you'd shown someone, if I said to you, how do you go to the bakery from here? And I said, right, go out there and turn left. Or if you want to take the scenic route, then you can go like this way and down that way. And you're like, look, I have the directions, thanks. I want to get my croissant. That's
a perfect analogy.
I didn't come out here today to see the scenic. Okay, that's a bad example, because I actually really like seeing the scenic route sometimes. But in theory, your brain is saying, no, you idiot, you just need a croissant, go and that mm-hmm. way and left, and just, you know, leave this crazy guy alone. And if I started riffing like, oh, and if you want to actually climb over the roofs, you know, you'd be like, right, stop this conversation. Let's get out here. So it's fundamentally doing something that is not, I mean, it's wrong. It's not the teacher's fault per se, but we need to be conscious of that as teachers, to not, you know, it's the designer designing the great tool and then explaining all the amazing functionality. You know, I've designed this engine, it's a motor engine, and it can make cars go forward. Did you know anything about internal combustion? You're like, well, no, I just actually want to go forward in the car. I don't need to know how it works. That's your thing. You're passionate about that. Great. Talk to another engineer about it. So when two teachers get together, you can say, oh, aren't synonyms amazing? And this idiomatic phrase, isn't it just amazing? Nobody cares, apart from teachers. So right. You have to keep your geekiness to yourself. Don't pawn that off on your students, right? So pedagogically, that was the first thing. But then you were asking me as well about things like motivation and confidence. Can you tell me a bit more about what are your musings, what are your ponderings about confidence and motivation?
How, as a trainer, do you build those? When you see somebody that's turning up to the classes and they're motivated, they clearly have, like you said, a need for the language, a want for the language, a yearn for the language, for whatever reason it might be in their personal life. How do you then blend that with the confidence they need to keep experimenting with it, keep making mistakes, breaking? And this comes back to fear,
right?
Because as a learner, we're all crippled by fear. Yeah. By saying the wrong thing or getting something wrong, making yourself look stupid, insulting somebody, you know, all of this kind of stuff. So what tips could you give to the other trainers out here that might be listening to your podcast that would help them understand a way to build that confidence within the student?
It's very tricky, because what we're talking about essentially, and this is exactly what I talked about just today, episode 5, what you're trying to tell the teacher to be, what the teacher actually needs to be in this case, is kind of half a life coach and half a teacher, mm-hmm. a language teacher, because you're exactly right. It's one of those few things where you're teaching someone, and I always talk about how, and this is not talked about enough, certainly not in our circles anyway, language training is so often lumped in with all other types of training. And it is not, you know, if you put language training in the same category as training in how to use Microsoft Excel better, or training in how to, I don't know, do a video conference or something like that, it's not a hard skill. It's not something where you can just learn the facts and then replicate those facts and do the right thing. And, you know, maybe you'll do something wrong, but you're not going to be like socially embarrassed by it. You might just, your boss might say, hey, you did the Excel sheet wrong, you know, you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm learning, I just did the training. That's fine, you know. It's a soft skill, so it's more like public speaking training or confidence training, for example, or management training, you know, where you learn different management styles, how to like treat your employees better, stuff like that. But even then, in those things, there's theories to learn, there's mantras to learn, there's things, you know, you have a fixed body of information that is digestible within the time of the training course. So if I give you confidence training, I've designed a confidence program. It's not designed to go on forever. It's designed to give you key coping mechanisms to increase your confidence and to go into your job being more confident, right? And then you have to practice it. And the more you practice it, the better you get. But you're not going to have to come back to me. You've got the tools that exist. I've given them to you. That's the closed body of information I've given to you. I've shown you how to do it. We've practiced it. And now you go away and you do it yourself. Maybe you come back to me to tell me how it went, and I check the impact of my training, which is important too. But think about language then. There is literally no fixed body of information to give. If you're just teaching somebody how to speak, from a beginner level, the body of information is huge. Mm. You're never going to encapsulate that. If you think that a kid spends 4 years learning a language to the point of being fluent, at the point of being conversational, right? A five-year-old kid may not speak like, you know, Barack Obama, but it's going to be a conversational kid. They'll be able to tell you about their day and what they're thinking and their dreams or whatever. So to get to that point, you're doing, you know, some people say an average of 20 hours a week of exposure for kids like that, you know, minimum. Mm. So minimum 20 hours a week over 52 times four. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of hours in there. You know, it's coming close to that whole 10,000 hour to master something theory, right?
Yep.
But that, you know, that is the size of the body of the information that you're looking at. Unless you really drill it down to something, something bite-sized. So if you say, okay, you might be a beginner, but what do you need to do? And this is where teachers need to be more on it with objective settings. So they need to say, right, I see that Dan doesn't need to do anything in particular. You don't need to give a presentation to a French company to sell your products right now. That would be an impossible thing. I would have to give you the whole body to get you to the whole body of information to get you to fluency, to send you in there, accent, everything. It is just physically impossible mm-hmm. in like a short time. So I couldn't do it in a month or 2 months or 3 months. Give me every day, 8 hours a day, 4 or 5 months, and maybe we're gonna hit it, right? But that's, you know, that's already difficult. If you say, I just want to be able to order my croissant in the morning, that's easy. I can design that over a few weeks and say we're going to target these specific expressions, and those expressions form the body of information. You practice those and you go away and practice, and that's fine, right? But even then, and this is another issue, I can give you the fixed expressions to order a croissant, but the day that that baker asks you another personal question, mm-hmm. I cannot prepare you for all of the possible scenarios of which he's going to ask, which could be, oh, I haven't seen your kids recently. What's going on? You know, are they in summer camp? Or
it could be something even as basic as avec ceci.
Well, yeah.
And you just wasn't expecting that.
That's not that bad, because right. avec ceci, I can say, right, well, he's asking what else do you want. Right. There's only a fixed number of things in a bakery, so you could have an eclair or a pan au chocolat.
But if you're not expecting that question at the end, and it completely throws the learner off.
I'll give you an anecdote. I did exactly what I'm saying. I practiced what I'm preaching, I suppose, but in the inverse. Mm-hmm. I had a French teacher when I was in Paris, and I was saying, sure, you know, when I go to the supermarket, it's tough because I'm going to the supermarket almost every day to get my lunch, and I get to the end and she's telling me the price and I'm trying to say thanks and I'm not sure if I'm saying thanks the right way. Am I being too friendly, not friendly enough? And you have that whole self-doubt thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like a reasonably confident person out in the open space. So that, you know, it goes to show with another language, you kind of go back to square one in terms of confidence, right?
Yeah.
So that's for sure. And she gave me the tools to say what I wanted. And then when I went down to get my food the next day and I was armed with all these expressions and feeling like, yeah, this is my moment. And then she pulls out carte de fidélité, right. Which in English, loyalty card, fidelity, it doesn't, you know, I understand, but you know, looking back, but at that time, it just threw me completely off. Mm-hmm. And you're just looking at her and she's looking at you. And it's one of those social moments where you're just like, this is hell. I want to implode into space right now and disappear. And that's the end of me. Because you're like, and you want to say something in English, but then that's rude too.
Yes.
And you don't even know if she can speak English. She might just look at you like she's as embarrassed as you are now. And it was a nightmare. So I think I just said, comment, you know, I did my, oh, excuse me, pardon. And she said the same thing again. And she said it really fast too. It wasn't entirely my fault. She said it really fast, but it threw me completely. And then after that, I think I just kind of went, gave her my credit card and she rolled her eyes. And then I walked away and that was it. And then later on, it was like, oh, she probably asked you for your loyalty card, your carte de fidélité. That's it.
Right.
And then you never forget that word ever again.
Right.
Which is kind of the fallacy of English teaching in a way, because I got that from a colleague who told me that. Mm-hmm. And then that word goes in and then I remember it forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. An English teacher's job is not actually to give you the vocabulary you need. I just talked about this in the last episode. If you want to get the vocabulary you needed, you would buy a book, mm-hmm. you would learn the vocabulary, the grammar, and then you would go to a pub and you would talk to someone. And you would just rinse and repeat, right? And if you do that, you're going to expose yourself to a socially awkward situation, but the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. Yeah. It's like being a teacher the first time you're in front of a class, you're just bricking it because you're in front of a whole group of people who are looking to you and they don't even speak English and you're just like, oh. But the more you do it, like you walk in, you could say, there's a class over there right now, 10 people, go walk in and give them a 2-hour lesson and I'll go and do it right now. Mm. I don't need any preparation. And that's an expert language trainer, the concept is that you've got so much experience, you just know it off by heart. Now, so we're not doing just language transmission. What we're doing is we're trying to help you get over these confidence problems. Mm-hmm. So I am coming back to what you asked. Of course, I do always come back. I get there. What are we doing to improve confidence to help learners learn better? And if we can do that, then we're doing our job. You know, our job should really be to make you learn faster, more easily, of course, in a more structured way, of course, in a more kind of, you know, we're really on the ball with corrections. We can explain corrections really easily to you and stuff like that. But the number one thing is detecting what problem that person has at the beginning in terms of self-esteem, in terms of how they feel about their language and their language use. How are they as a beginner? Are they really having situations, like you said, where you're getting really embarrassed? Well, then you're going to have to work as, like I said, kind of a life coach with that person. Mm-hmm. Try to find a way, because, you know, what is life coaching? What is coaching, right? I'm not an expert in it. I haven't researched that much. But I figure from what I've seen that it's something like what I already do, which is people who have lived a lot of life and they've been through a lot of stuff. Try not to swear. So through a lot of stuff.
It's a family show, folks.
But I didn't put on, you know, I did put on the profanity thing. So I find my best not to swear, like I get caught out. You know, they've been through a lot of stuff in their life, and they've been through it and gone through it as a kind of auto. What do you call that when you learn something by yourself? I've got the French word in my head for some reason. You know, self-taught. So you're self-taught in how to deal with these situations. So if you've gone through something and someone else is going through it, you can really easily explain to them, oh, when I went through this, things that really helped me were X, Y, and Z. And then that person accelerates, goes through it faster.
Is this coming back to empathy?
It probably will. Yeah, because as a teacher.
Like you just showed empathy to me with like the bakery thing, and you gave me a perfect example of your carte de fidélité. Yeah. And you know, so you showed empathy and then you backed that up with authenticity, with a story. And you had me. Like, right, yes, okay, here's a guy that knows exactly what I'm talking about. And that will build trust between the learner and the teacher and help, you know, build those building blocks of confidence.
So you're okay, just to explain where you're coming from with this whole empathy and understanding thing, it's a sales tactic for you because that's what you do. We haven't talked about what you actually do. Your job, yep. Your expertise mm-hmm. is actually yes. in sales, right?
Yes.
Right. So what were the you explained that to me earlier. It was that there was a three-part thing to that?
Yes. What wasn't ever, you know, it's not been taught back in the 80s. In the 80s, it was all like just pick up the phone and make 1,000 phone calls a day and just wait till someone says yes. Yeah. But now we can't be doing business like that anymore. So what I teach is, you know, when you're speaking with someone and you're conversing with someone who you know you can help. So it's the same thing with a teacher. You know you can help that person learn the language. You first of all, you've got to come over all of their excuses and objections about learning the language, like, oh, I was never good at language at school or whatever else, and getting over these mental blocks and these fears about making mistakes. So using silence to really understand where are they coming from, understand their fears, understand their blocks, because if you let them speak, it will come out. And if you just hold that silence an extra 3 to 5 seconds, I urge all language trainers to do this. You know, if you ask a tutor, if you ask a learner, you know, what are your basic fears around the language that we're trying to learn today? Let them speak and then just be silent for an extra 3 to 5 seconds. And then behind that silence is where they will carry on. Your brain is wired to carry on. People don't like awkward silences. They will carry on because they feel embarrassed that they've not answered your question properly. And that's where the real information comes out. That's where the real pain points come out and the real concerns. And that's where you'll be able to start understanding the student more. And then you want to show the empathy right there. That's the empathy. And your example of your story there was absolutely perfect. Now we're building a bond of trust. And then you want to show authenticity. But this is how I came over it. And this is how we're going to work with you. And this is how we can take you forward as well.
Yeah. So I think empathy, it does have a massive kind of implication for language trainers, because it's what I was saying, we're not actually psychologists, we're not actually confidence trainers or something like that. We're only able to use the examples and the experiences that we've had, you know, not just with ourselves, but with other people as well. You know, when I was a trainer, I used a lot of examples of other people who had overcame something and I'd helped them, or, you know, I'd seen them, I'd witnessed them do it. And you know, those situations can also be used as examples. You know, I had this person once and they were like this, and then we did this and that really helped them. Do you think that could also help you? But if you can give a personal example, that's the best way for sure. And I mean, that would be something that it's one of those funny things where these things are kind of common sense things. They're kind of just hardwired into being human, that we want to help each other. We want to be nice to each other. We want to spread the love a little bit. And people call them different things in different disciplines. So you're coming from sales and training people how to be better in sales. And that is a communication thing. These two humans communicating and you're talking about authenticity and empathy. And I'm coming from a totally different sector, which is language training, but still in that sector, authenticity and empathy are important, and probably in loads of different walks of life, actually. Mm. Being empathetic, which yep. you know is getting more and more talked about today, how we're altruistic by nature. Humans yes. are altruistic by nature. We want to help each other. We want to be more socially responsible. And so, yeah, in the language class, empathy can really help. And it was what I was talking about earlier, because for us, empathy, and actually, no, I'm going to say it's particular, but I think in sales, it's probably the same. Earlier in today, I was doing an episode talking about three typical profiles of learners that I would have in front of me. Mm-hmm. So the ones, each one of them with a psychological thing they have to overcome. So mm-hmm. there was the one who thinks that education is sacred and who believes very strongly in how they were educated and that the way you're teaching them should fall in line with that, because, you know, how dare you question or, you know, think that you can do better when you're not even qualified. You know, so that's the kind of standoffish person. And then you have the grumpy, angry person who has traumatized by language at some point in their life, did some language course and got, you know, somebody, you know, razzed on them for whatever the mistakes they were doing. And mm-hmm. they just got so embarrassed. They thought, I'm never going to speak this ever again. And they've been like that ever since.
Or were put in a low set at high school for learning French.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Is that what happened to you? You were
mid-set.
Down?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I was top of my class. Man.
Go for it, man.
Yeah, yeah. But then I forgot everything. Like, right. arrived in France with zero words. Yeah. And that's just that's the ultimate example of rote learning, what we call rote yes. learning versus experiential learning. So actually yep. going out there and just doing it and just, you know, not reading a book and talking about it in the classroom.
It's almost a travesty, I would argue, that we even bother teaching languages in a classroom setting, because it just breeds a negative mindset around, not negative mindset, a self-limiting belief. Like learning my high school French did nothing but create a self-limiting belief about my ability to learn another language.
I think that's absolutely right. Because I know, but the other thing that I wanted to mention was I wrote an article a few years ago about classroom learning, and mm-hmm. it was based on some other publications at that time that were talking about making the classroom a more realistic place. And a lot of people talk about bringing realistic materials into the classroom, because the classroom is fundamentally an unnatural place to mm-hmm. communicate. Because when you go out into the world, you're not going to sit with someone in a classroom to talk to them. You're going to sit in a bar, you're going to sit in a bakery, yep. you're going to sit in a restaurant, you're going to go to the tax office to try to explain how to pay your tax. So
in your high school, how many French teachers did you have that were teaching French?
One.
And where were they from?
From England, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hands up, those people that are listening actually had a French tutor teaching them French in their school.
But even yeah. then, even if you have having a native person is obviously better, mm-hmm. but even then you're learning, you're practicing in a setting that's not simulating real life.
No.
So you're not, when you're in a classroom in a safe space, you're not simulating real life. So you need to mix it up. You need to have those safe moments, right? So for the confidence building, coming back to that, mm-hmm. Having that safe space is a good start, because you can create a safe space where you can really have someone open up about their problems. Like you were saying, when you give them that extra minute, I didn't get a chance to speak about that. Giving them the extra minute is something that it's very difficult for a trainer to do, because we're hardwired. When we hear you start a sentence and you go, I was going to the, and you know, I know where you were going. And so I want to say park.
Right.
And it's just this reflex, and time goes more slowly in my head because I'm just waiting for you to say it. And I'm like, have I waited too long? Are they embarrassed? Am I making it worse? And, you know, we have this kind of self-doubt as well when it comes to training. But
yes, of course. Yeah, and that's we need to touch on that as well.
Right.
But carry on.
Right.
Carry on.
So self-doubt.
Yes.
In the trainer, him or herself. But if you can hold it back and you can wait, if you keep a piece of paper in your book the next time you're going doing like a week's teaching. Have one column times when it worked and one column times where it didn't work. Do the waiting game. You know, someone says, I'm going to the, and really wait, really just give it, and, you know, be nice, smile, tell them it's okay, go ahead. You know, give them the go ahead. Don't just sit there like with a stoic face waiting for them to say something or like check your phone or something like that. You know, keep eye contact, be like, yep, no problem, go ahead, you can do it, you know, that kind of thing. Try to see how many times they actually are able to get the word in the end or not. And you'll probably find that like more times than not, you'll have crosses all the way down the yes column and not necessarily the no column. There's sometimes they just don't know the word and they're just like, oh, I don't know, can you tell me? You're like, yeah, sure, fine. But you know, if you let them keep going, they'll come to it on their own. And it obviously makes such a bigger difference if they get to it on their own than if you tell them. Like, that is just a no-brainer. Again, common sense, let them recall the word. If they recall the word, it creates a stronger memory than if you just give it to them, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like in anything, you know, anything in the, any other skill in the world, you know, if you're doing the violin and you're just kind of looking for a note, I'm not going to reach over and put your hand on the note. Yeah. That's dumb. You need, your fingers need to do it. You need to create that connection yourself. So the next time it becomes more automatic and more automatic. And that's part of language training. But sorry, what was your point about self-doubting? Self-esteem.
Yes, it's very easy for us on the side of being the learner. We are hardwired to think that you as the teacher, you know everything, and in many cases we're very envious of your level of language, and that creates a barrier between the teacher and the tutor. We need to show empathy on the learning side of things towards the professor or the teacher and understand they don't know everything and they have your knowledge in their hands and they respect that. And we should be able to show empathy towards them that they're probably just as nervous as us sometimes, especially in the first few lessons when you're trying to earn that trust and show that person that you are worthy of their time and their money.
Yeah. There's a lot of trainers who, whenever they get stuck in the first few lessons with a question where the learner says, yeah, but why is this grammar point like that? And a lot of trainers would say, oh, and they'll give some, you know, explanation, and it'll be something that they've seen in a book or something they've just kind of pulled out of their hat or made up on the spot. Instead of just saying, you know what, I don't actually know, that's interesting, let's have a think about that, shall we? And like sit down and actually figure it out with them, come to their own conclusion. Like sometimes I would actually have done that on purpose and have just, you know, I know the answer because, you know, again, expert language trainers, I've read all the books, so I know the deep, serious grammar stuff. So when someone says to me, oh, but why is it, you know, you said the queen, you know, as a good example, you said the queen, and you meant the Queen of England, how am I supposed to know that it's that queen? And if you were in Spain and said the queen, would it be something else, or the king, or whatever? And it's these questions about definite articles, for example, that, you know, it can blow people's minds because it goes very deep into a fundamental, automatic, subconscious understanding of what language is and what references are within a text, if you consider a text to also be speech. That when someone's speaking, your brain is making all these automatic connections that are just, you know, some of them are really sort of mind-blowing. How do you know that it's like that? You just do. And either you just say, it's just like that, or you try to find some harebrained explanation. Mm-hmm. Or you sit down and say, well, that's actually really interesting. Let's look at some examples and try to figure it out. Even though I know what the answer is, I prefer to say, well, let's look. Let's have a look. You know, I don't know. But, you know, so first of all, that's creating what you've just talked about, that kind of connection between trainer and learner, because it is something that is talked about. The difficulty of individual lessons is something every language trainer in the world knows, because when you're in a group, you outnumber the trainer. So the trainer can be more of a facilitator and the group can be helping each other, and you have much more peer feedback, peer mentoring, peer correction, whatever. And the teacher knows that, and the teacher plays with that. The teacher does role plays within the group. If you're with me and I'm fluent in French and you're a beginner and we do a role play, you're going to feel like an idiot when you're talking to me. Right. And that's, you know, I was never able to practice German with my wife when I was starting out, because we already have this relationship that she was like, I don't want to like lower my opinion of you in my head as like somebody who can't even speak. You know, it's strange. So you really need to either have a conversational partner who's already ready for that or a trainer. But you have that natural barrier where it, you as a learner do feel intimidated and a bit condescended to almost in a way without the teacher meaning to in any way. So there is a very, very difficult relationship there in individual lessons. So the teacher's chance to make that work is to drill down into examples or discussions or ways of talking to each other that opens up empathy. So saying, do you know what? I'm not sure. Let's figure it out. Now you're armed with the information. If they say, hey, you're supposed to be the teacher, how come you don't know? And as somebody, that first category of person who thinks education is sacred,
right,
you can whip it out and be like, well, don't worry, I can tell you the full explanation of, and you blow their mind and they go, oh, okay. Say, no, but don't forget about that. Let's actually look at it together. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked about that last time as well. A lot of the psychological problem we have in classes is knowing how to please learners based on what they think it should be like versus actually giving them what you know that they need.
And that's your three personalities. I think I interrupted you just after you. So the first personality is Mr. System.
Mr. System works.
Okay.
And you're crazy.
Second one is
I've been hurt before and you're not getting in.
That's where you piqued my interest. So that's me.
My shield is up. Right? That's you, right? Okay. My shield is up.
So who's number three? Who's this mysterious person?
Number three is the put myself down person.
Right.
Put myself down person is they have been hurt, but they blame themselves as opposed to somebody else. And they took on the responsibility for what happened. So whatever language problem they had that made them embarrassed, they take on the responsibility for that themselves. So that person will just constantly talk about how bad they are. Oh, my level's so bad. It's very often people who are like pre-intermediate conversational level who will just constantly go on and on and on about how bad they are because they need that self-assurance. People say, no, that was really good. And all
that's
the time,
interesting.
Kind of thing, right?
That's interesting because when people, you know, you must have seen it 1,000 times when people's parents or family come to visit them here, the first thing they expect is total fluency from their siblings or their sons or daughters that have been living in a foreign currency, foreign currency.
Yeah.
Well, that's a Freudian slip back to the old days.
Dan comes from finance, so just to explain that he's money on the brain.
Yes. Coming to the foreign country where you've been living, they expect, you know, and so what's your level of French? And it's this defense mechanism. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I think as learners, we have to stop saying that because that sets up your mindset.
Yeah. There's another profile I didn't talk about. It's me. My profile is my family come here and it's the humble one. It's the modest one. So when my family come here and they're like, oh man, you've been here for like 10 years. I bet your French is so good. And you're like, yeah, it's all right. You know, I get by, you know, I can do the, I don't put myself down, but I wouldn't say, yeah, actually I'm really good in French. And you know, I've lived here for 10 years. So obviously it's like my language now, you know, it's something I've integrated. I don't feel like I want to, because I know where they're coming from. They're coming from a context where they're downloading Duolingo and trying to learn a few sentences and feeling kind of giddy about being able to use the odd French word. And so if I say, well, yeah, man, I can like do anything in French, basically. I can live my life in French. That's like a whole other level. So I don't want to make them feel bad, but that's my kind of personality as a poor Irish guy who just doesn't want to, you know, I feel guilty about everything. That's a whole other thing. But it's not normally the kind of profiles we get here in France. But I can't remember why we got back to those
because I'd interrupted you and I was just interested to find out who was number three.
But where did we leave off then before you were asking about that? We're talking about individuals and having that barrier and getting that empathy up because it's, you know, you can deal with those personalities much more easily in an individual scenario, but like I said, so you need to get into it with Mrs. Education, who cares about her education, you know, pander to her and give her what she wants, but still give her what she needs after that. So say, okay, you know, I've shown you what it really is and I've blown your mind with how much of an expert I am. And, you know, obviously, you know, education-wise, I'm giving you the right education, but I'm going to try to lead you to discover it with me. So it's almost kind of like, I'll give you what you want, but only if you come with me and try it my way. And if you really don't think it works, then we'll go back to your way. It's that sort of, you know, so a teacher knows how to do that. Now, if we come to your case, which is, so you're Mr. I was hurt. I'm defensive in my class. I make jokes. I take the piss. I don't really.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I couldn't take it seriously. Yeah.
Couldn't connect with the language. Didn't see the point in the language. Was deemed not gifted enough to learn another language. Do you remember when we're about the same age? But I think you take your options, your GCSEs, and those that were deemed smart enough to take another language had the choice of learning German and Spanish on top of the French that they were already doing.
Okay.
Those thickos you could go and do Greek mythology and classical studies, which turned out to be amazing, by the way. So great.
I wish I'd done that.
Yeah. And it kind of, but you know, you carried that stigma with you throughout the rest of your schooling career. It's like, what have you got this afternoon? Oh, I've got PE and classics. What? PE and classics? Oh, you're one of those guys. Weren't smart enough to do the Spanish or German. Even though that guy is hating his life because he's got to go and do Spanish and German and he can't even get to grips with French. Yeah. And 9 times out of 10, it's the same person that's same English guy that's teaching the French who ends up teaching the Spanish.
So your teacher's job is to help you find something to reconnect you with language learning as a thing, as something to do, and also the language that is associated with that, because you're associating, being put down and being called a thicko, you're associating that with learning a language, but also the language itself, probably. And so, and a lot of people are like that. You know, you're going to live here for a while. You're going to find, there was a guy the other day, my parents ordered, they live here, and they ordered some scaffolding from a dude on eBay, right, and the guy came to deliver it to them, and they heard an accent when he talked to them on the phone, and they were like, oh, are you English too? And yeah, and he came over. So how many years have you been living here? He's like, oh yeah, about 10-15 years now. And his French was like basic, like loads of mistakes. And that's probably because, you know, there's no excuse for that other than somebody who has those barriers, nobody's ever got over those barriers with them. So they've never been able to reconnect. Now, it's another way the teacher can help, more than just you go to a bar and you talk to someone. If you just talk to someone in a bar, you're still going to feel that embarrassment. You're still going to feel that you're a bit of a thicko in front of someone else. Mm-hmm. And you're probably not going to go back to the bar. Nobody would put themselves through that torture. Very few people have that motivation to put themselves through that torture. That's why most people don't do that practice. That's why that method of practicing exists. It's free. You can either do it in a local bar if you live somewhere with tourists, or you can do it online. There's 100 websites out there where you can talk for free to someone over Skype and practice your language, do a language exchange. Loads of websites that exist like that, right?
Huh, okay. Yeah.
You say, and I'll tell you all about it, because I know from 10 years of teaching and hundreds or maybe thousands of people that I've told the same story to who went, oh, really? Give me the website. I can tell you one hand how many of them actually did.
Right.
Right. Because I remember the ones who did, and they only did it because somebody else in the class went with them.
Mm.
Or there was a teacher who was going and they went with the teacher, for example. But people don't put themselves through that kind of torture on their own, right? So the teacher has the opportunity, as the one who is, you know, this person has opened themselves up to speaking the language again, and they've found you. And so you're there as their safe way to get back into it. So you're trying to do this kind of exposure therapy to get them back into it. But you need to find a connection. And any time that I had those scenarios, it was a lot about what do you actually love in life? What passions do you have? What things do you enjoy? What things make you laugh? What films do you like? What music do you like? Let's talk about anything in your life. Not just like, oh, yeah, I like to read a book from time to time. But like, no, oh, Lady Gaga, her music speaks to me. I'm like, right, okay.
Madame Gaga.
Yeah, she's cool, man. Oh, the whole story, right? If you said to me today, Lady Gaga really presses my buttons, I would say, right. I actually happen to know that Lady Gaga has an awesome story behind her life. She has a documentary. It's on Netflix.
Right.
You can get it in English with French subtitles. Mm-hmm. Or French and with English subtitles or whatever. We're gonna drill into this because if I can show you a way, if you can watch that documentary with me, and I can get you to a point where you actually understand it in French, then you're going to feel some sort of connection then to French. That thing that you're like, oh, I really am happy that I watched that documentary, and that happens to be in the context of French, puts French in a better light for you. So if you have more sort of a good, strong, recent example could trump a lot of past examples, or at least dwarf them, so that you have that confidence then to go forward. So the trainer needs to go outside of the standard program and not just say, okay, you need to go to the bakery, you need to go to the supermarket, but say, okay, let's think about what products you really like in the supermarket. What things do you love eating? Like, I've just got broken up with and I'm depressed and I'm eating a tub of ice cream. What flavor ice cream is it? Tell me about it. And we're going to use that. Use anything you can. Because the thing about language is, it is ubiquitous. No matter what you do in your everyday life, it's attached to words. Mm. You wake up and you open your eyes, and even before when you're dreaming, everything is attached to words. So the teacher will always be able to find something that connects to you.
Your alarm clock's probably set to the radio. So you wake up.
Might not. I have no kids. I have young kids. That would be disastrous. No. I don't even have an alarm. I have a baby who just wakes me up every morning at 6:30. So that's I don't need an alarm.
Kids are great.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah.
Well, mate, we're gonna have to wrap this one up.
Yeah, because we could talk for hours about this.
We're not finished.
What's the conclusion for the day? We need teachers to go away with something after, God help them, 50 minutes of rambling.
Well, once you've edited it, all the rubbish out.
There's no editing.
Raw.
50 solid minutes
raw.
Of raw.
Yeah.
Rambling nonsense.
Osborne and Prince raw.
Osborne and Prince. Yeah.
Okay.
Live, uncut.
So, all right. Yeah. So, what's the takeaway then?
I think the takeaway is it's same as it was in episode 5, but maybe stronger in this episode about empathy. As a teacher, it doesn't matter. I think here's a good point, right? Learners can have a million different personality profiles. Mm. But you as a teacher, as a good teacher, we all need to share one particular trait, and that is the trait of empathy. Everybody has it. It's just a case of working it. If you don't feel like, and I've had teachers in the past who told me, yeah, but you know, that's not the way I am in class. I'm not, you know, I don't like to make friends with them, or I don't, you know, people have different opinions about it. But it doesn't matter what you think about it. Find your way, your personality, to be more empathetic, because we all have empathy. We're humans. We all have empathy. We all care about our learners. We care about our clients, right? Mm. If you don't care about your clients, there might be something wrong. You might need to go deeper on that and think, do I actually want to be a trainer? Because even if you say, oh, but I'm only teaching like top execs, that's another excuse I hear a lot. I'm only teaching top execs. You know, they're not really interested in that kind of stuff. Nonsense. Top execs are also under a lot of pressure. Yeah. And their use of language is arguably a hell of a lot more important than it is for, you know, Mr. Office Assistant, who's just, you know, filing and needs to send the odd email. So you still, you know, everybody has passions. Everybody has something you can connect to them with. If you try to get that empathy, how do you get empathy with somebody? This is a no-brainer for me. How can you become more empathetic? I'm telling people to become more empathetic. It sounds like just, you know, I don't know, grow 6 inches taller. How do you do that?
Listen and silence.
Listen. Ask flipping questions. And I can tell you that because now I'm in business.
Yeah.
I have clients and I'm building a product that's really helping people. And it's because I never stop asking flipping questions. Mm-hmm. I never stop saying, is it going all right? How's it going? What can we do better? What do you think about this feature? What do you think about that feature? What did your learners think about it? Just keep asking questions. And don't ever tell someone how they should do it. Get them to tell you how they would do it. If you can guide them to that answer themselves with questions, and they say it themselves, and say, oh, I really need to do this. Like, you said it, man, not me. Write it down.
Exactly.
They're going to take that away with them.
And, you know, just to layer on top of that, I think for any fellow learners out there, it's very important for us to understand that we have to bring empathy to the table as well. Empathy's got to come to the table from both sides. How many of us growing up in school, kid of, you know, 30 kids in the school, how many of those kids ever showed empathy towards a teacher that's walking in to spend another 8 hours of their day teaching 90 to 120 kids in a day, a subject they love and passionate about, but they know not one of these people is going to walk away from school speaking fluently or even connecting with it. Where's the empathy there? So as learners, we need to come in as empathetic with the tutor as you guys would come in with us. And so
think about just a final example. That school example is perfect for me, because one thing, when I thought about becoming a teacher, I actually always kind of had an ambition secretly to become a teacher. I always respected and looked up to my teachers and thought it was a really, really good job. And so I thought a lot about the teachers I had in secondary school. I don't remember primary school, but secondary school I remember very well. And there was this huge, huge worlds apart difference between my favorite teachers and the ones I didn't like. And everybody knows it. We all share that same example. So think about that. Think about that when you're reflecting on yourself and how empathetic you are or not. Because there's one thing, if you really think about it, it's blindingly obvious that was different between the teachers you liked and the teachers you didn't like. And I guarantee it is empathy, because any good teacher, I remember my history teacher, my English teacher, my math teacher, I remember them, I remember their faces, I remember the way that they spoke to me. I remember knowing when we were doing something wrong, that they were really, you really felt it when they were angry at you and when they were telling you off, because this was a person that normally understood really well the kinds of stuff you were going through as a teenager and who wouldn't necessarily complain if you didn't do your homework right, if they understood your situation, or wouldn't force you to speak in class when they know that you're not a very confident public speaker, or give you a really harsh grade or something because they want to push you to do better or something like that. They cared, and you felt the caring. You felt like they were something of a kind of friend, come grandfather, come, you know, whatever, that kind of role where you feel like they're a guardian in a way, like one of your guardians, right? And that stays with you. And you try to remember the bad teachers. It's hard to remember the bad teachers because they were the ones who were just matter of fact, don't do that. Why? Because I said so. You know, it's not like that. Why? Because I said so. Oh, you know, I remember my chemistry teacher. You put your hand up and say, oh, you know, we heard the other class with the cool teacher got to do a custard bomb. Can we do a custard bomb?
Right.
They'd be like, no, that's ridiculous. Shut up and sit down. And you just think like, there's no empathy there. That you know, if I was that teacher, I would have been like, dude, awesome idea.
Yeah.
I want to make a custard bomb too. Mm-hmm. I'm a human and I love blowing stuff up. Because, you know, who doesn't? Now, that's probably not a good thing to say on a podcast, is it? But when you're a kid, I don't get blowing stuff. I'm talking fireworks. I'm talking the level of like strapping an action man to a firework and blowing something up, right? Or a custard bomb, which was just, I'll explain what a custard bomb was. It was a can of custard powder. You have the lid on and you stick diodes into it or something. I can't remember. You put electric charge through it, basically. And it'll pop. It'll blow up, and it's really interesting to see a custard bomb blow up. And so you ask that, and you know, the teacher could say, without, I have to learn that with my kids too. It's something we, you know, me and my wife talk about sometimes. You know, if my daughter asks me, Daddy, can I watch TV? Sometimes I just need your reaction. We'll be like, no, and she'll flip out. And I'm like, it's true that I know why she wants to watch TV, I know why she likes TV, and you know, I could at least say, listen, I understand you really want to watch TV right now, but we actually have other stuff to do. It's a much nicer way to explain it. It shows a lot more empathy than just being like, no, because then you don't understand. You feel unfairly treated. So a lot of empathy is about trying to be fair to, I think. Trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes is obviously the fundamental of empathy. So let's just say it out loud. Put yourself in the learner's shoes and think, okay, they might have just said, this is boring when they're sitting in your language class. And you're like, how dare you? And you just want to like kick them out basically because you can. Instead of doing that, maybe think, right, why is this person bored? Is it actually my fault? Am I boring them a little bit? Am I maybe boring? Is the thing I'm doing actually not tapping into their passion because that's their profile? They need to really be doing something that accesses their passion. So put yourself in their shoes before you react. Again, about stopping and listening, that actually gives you the opportunity to think and to put yourself in the other person's position before you just launch into your own opinion and just like cut them down, you know? So maybe that's the thing. Really try to start putting, if you don't feel like you can be empathetic or you're not sure, start trying to pause when someone does something where normally you would react harshly or normally you would you know, cut them down, and try to put yourself in the other person's shoes and think about, why did they just do that? Why did they not do their homework? Why are they giving me excuses? Why did they not want to participate in that activity? Why did they not listen to what I said? Try to think outside the box. They're not just lazy, nasty a-holes. They're people like you, and they have problems and they have fears, confidence issues, whatever. Try to put yourself in their shoes and think about, what would I actually like in this situation? What would make me feel better? What would make me feel safe? I'll try to share something like that with them and see if that works and see if that improves your teaching. And if it doesn't, I will eat this microphone in front of me because it's ridiculous. Anyway, we're going to let them go because we're touching on an hour here.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks to Dan for joining me today, and hope to see you in the next podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's make this a thing.
All right. Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Thanks for checking out this podcast. And if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.